This is The Coaching Inn, a podcast from 3D Coaching. So welcome to The Coaching Inn. My name's Claire Pedrick, and today I'm in conversation with Sunny. Sunny Stout-Rostron is a coach in South Africa, and she's here to talk to us a bit about the AECC, the African Executive Coaching Convention that's coming up in March, and also all things coaching and Africa. Sunny, welcome. It's really good to have you.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here.
So tell us a bit about your coaching journey, and I'm really interested hearing you speak. Tell us about your journey that brought you to South Africa.
So in terms of coaching, I was in the UK at the time. I lived for 25 years between London and Paris, and I was doing a lot of facilitation and leadership development work and management development work, more management development in those days in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s. And I started being paid in coffee. And what was happening was leaders would ask me, that was really a great session with the team. Can we have a chat? And what I discovered was they were walking away getting six-figure salaries. So I figured I was doing something, but I didn't know what I was doing. And what I was doing was coaching, but I hadn't been trained as a coach. I think I was fairly naturally always a coach and counselor, mentor, et cetera, teacher, et cetera. So I decided to go back and get some psychological training beneath me so I could work that out. And these were the days before, and I'll talk about this later. These were the days before any kind of certification for being a coach. So it was early days. So I started coaching through coffee.
That is so interesting, because I also started coaching before coaching was a word. And I did get paid for it, but I was actually being paid to do something else.
Right.
So it was called information and counseling, and it was so not. It was mentoring and coaching. But I love that story, being paid in coffee. Yes. And actually, that's still a risk, isn't it, for coaches today?
It's a risk if they don't set boundaries. Yeah. You know, they have to value their time. And that doesn't mean coaches shouldn't offer free coaching to people. I think it's really important that coaches offer a coaching and mentoring to at least a few people during the year. I always mentor 3 women a year that I take on board. And you could call me a coach mentor, I suppose. In that sense, because it's both coaching and mentoring, but I think it is very important your time, and skill, and your expertise to those who maybe can't afford it.
Yes, I totally agree. We give away 10% of our work for exactly the same reason. Really important. So, how did the South African connection happen, Sunny?
So, I happen to be married to a South African, and he was extremely ill. And I brought him home because we were told he only had a couple years to live. And so I was at the peak of my business, 10 years into my business in London, and was traveling all over doing coaching and team coaching, although we didn't have a name for team coaching at the time. And we struggled. I nearly lost him a couple times and saved his life one time. And I went home one day and said, we're going to Cape Town tomorrow.
Wow.
Landed here. We had to get a wheelchair and, you know, the whole thing. When we landed here, I ensconced him in Dawn Apartments in Cape Gardens. And I said, I'm going for a walk, and you have 3 hours to make up your mind whether you want to go to South Africa. And we came. So it took a year. We had one daughter in Italy at the time, and we had to bring my mother-in-law, who was 85, with us. That took some convincing to get her to come back to South Africa after 50 years. That's how I ended up here, and it's been one of my most interesting journeys of all the countries that I've lived in.
Wow.
It's a good journey.
Sounds an amazing journey, and a journey of courage and being vulnerable.
And my husband is still here.
That's fantastic news. Good, good. So a really good decision. So how did coaching start in South Africa then?
So I came in 1998, and between 1998 and 2002, I met quite a few people who were facilitators and management consultants and trainers, and there were a few people that called themselves a coach, but there was no certification for coaching in those.
So how did coaching start in South Africa then, Sunny?
So I came in 1998, and between 1998 and 2002, before I started doing my PhD in coaching with Middlesex University, I met all the trainers and facilitators and management consultants and leadership development people, which there weren't many, OD specialists, etc., in South Africa. And there weren't that many coaches, and there was no certification for coaches really virtually worldwide. And so I then did my doctoral journey, and we worked with master students in South Africa, where we're about 7 or 8 of us doing our PhD with Middlesex University, and we brought the lecturers over here. And it took until 2006. And in those 4 years, 5 years, one of my community project was to develop a professional coaching and mentoring body for South Africa. And that was my project. And that's what I did. And it took 6 years, actually, to really develop it. But that was part and parcel of my journey through my doctorate. And as a result of that, we started developing certificates in coaching in South Africa, and gradually that burgeoned into master's diplomas, master's degrees, and now PhDs, and all the universities have picked up on it. So I've been involved in a lot of the certification and master's programs that have developed in South Africa. And one of the important things is that I'm very connected globally. So I brought in two mentors, and one was the European Mentoring and Coaching Council, which had just started through my PhD supervisor, and also the Worldwide Association of Business Coaching, which was just starting. And they helped us with developing Comensa. And then from there, we started to develop certification, supervision. In South Africa, we were actually ahead of the game.
Wow.
You know, the ICF existed then, but we were really ahead of the game in terms of how fast we were developing.
Mm.
And I mean, I'll come back to it, but because of a couple other things, I kind of brought in about 20 people, but we consulted with 200 people in South Africa. We traveled all over South Africa, meeting anybody and everybody who wanted to be part of this professional coaching and mentoring body. And then deciding how to go about it. So that's basically the start of coaching in South Africa. And we have grown exponentially since then.
And now there's coaching across Africa.
So there is coaching across Africa. It's a bit mixed. I'd be loath to say it wasn't already starting in Kenya and Nigeria and Zimbabwe, but South Africa became the kind of face of the development of coaching in sub-Saharan Africa. I think Kenya and Nigeria are now kind of well into their route. And I think Zimbabwe was actually the first. Zimbabwe came to us and asked for help. And I spent about 6 years traveling to Zimbabwe to help them with leadership development through coaching for leadership development and helping them with their professional body and also thinking about the certifications that they needed to do. And other countries have come in, Botswana, Namibia. I mean, it's spread, you know, it's now spreading in Africa. But I think but it's not as well established as it is in South Africa. South Africa has really kind of led the way for whatever reason. No, I mean, South Africa, we have a first world face and a third world underbelly. So we have in the first world face, we have a way to distribute things and get things done. And that's quite helpful that not all African countries have in quite the same way.
Mm.
But, you know, and you may know more, but now it's become very important. There are a lot of students studying coaching and doing their PhDs and doctorates and their masters right across sub-Saharan Africa.
That's amazing, isn't it? And I think the question that's coming up for me as you're speaking is this about external coaching and or is it about people adopting a more coaching style in the way they lead and manage?
So I think there's two things. I think that's a really interesting question. I think, first of all, you used to be able to just put a shingle on your door and call yourself a coach, and that was that. It's you can't really do that anymore. So leaders now want to develop a coaching approach in the way they lead and manage. So leaders are starting to do masters in business and in management and executive coaching programs. I mean, I faculty for two in South Africa, the MPhil at Stellenbosch University and the and South African College of Applied Psychology in Cape Town. So I think leaders want to develop a coaching approach. And I think there is something else that people forget about Africa, which is mentoring has been here for a long time. And so that's why we developed the coaching and mentoring professional body, not just coaching. And there are internal coaches in organizations who are now getting properly trained as coaches internally in their organizations, although there are confidentiality problems, so that is more difficult with very, very senior people. And then we have the external coaches who are trained in the in organizations invite them in. So I think we have three different things here, which is the internal, the external, as well as the leaders and managers themselves wanting to develop a coaching approach. And organizations and HR practitioners, organizational development practitioners, they also, it's becoming more and more important that they are trained in some way in coaching to have that kind of an approach.
Because coaching builds capacity so effectively, doesn't it?
Builds capacity, it builds emotional maturity. It builds mental agility, it builds emotional agility, it builds helps to deal to adapt to change, so change agility. And I mean, the four agilities we work with in terms of developing leaders, those are three, and the fourth one is results agility. And that's what a coach is trying to help a manager with or a senior executive with. Or if they choose to be a life coach, I mean, we don't want to skip that there's also life coaching as well as business. There's business management, executive coaching, whatever you want to call it, has different definitions. But life coaching also is important. And a lot of younger people in their 20s and 30s are going for life coaches because they want to develop their career. And a life coach very often helps with career.
So some big developments, and some big impact by the sound of it.
Yes, I mean, I think one of the things that's quite important is the influence of other continents, other countries on coaching in Africa. And I mostly can talk to sub-Saharan Africa because I live in sub-Saharan Africa. But we were strongly influenced by what was starting to happen in Australia, who were kind of ahead of the game, the United States, the UK, and Europe. And so we've kind of walked along with them. They mentored us, they helped us, we've connected with them. One of the things I was very clear about when I was the founding president for Comensa was that we stayed connected to the professional bodies in other countries in the world. And now they're starting to develop in South America, in India, across Asia, Hong Kong, Singapore, China, I don't know too much about, but there are more and more professional bodies developing, and we have always been influenced and have influenced them. I mean, I'm one of the founding fellows for the Institute of Coaching at Harvard, and that was as a result of the work we did with the Global Coaching Conference in the 2009 through to about 2012, 13, 14. And we were very keen on developing research to develop the body of knowledge for coaching. That was one of the core reasons for developing academic certification for coaches, was to build a body of knowledge so we could research what was being done in terms of coaching. But we have always been influenced by and have influenced the other professional bodies and the other coaches in other countries. I don't think so much at the moment. I have an appetite for that. I come from San Francisco. I've lived in quite a few countries. I have an appetite for making sure we are connected globally. And I think the other thing that is really important is that today no matter where you live, whether it's Africa, Europe, US, UK, Canada, Australia, China, Hong Kong, wherever, is coaches need to develop cultural competence. And one of the key things is they need cultural awareness, cultural knowledge, they need self-awareness, they need to understand the people, the country, languages, the economy, the food. There's so much you need to understand. And that's really, really, really predominant in Africa, particularly. South Africa, I kind of cut my teeth on cultural competence working in South Africa and sub-Saharan Africa. How that I'm very passionate about that, understanding the cultures that you're working with in a country like South Africa, incredibly diverse, as are the other African countries. It's just incredibly important as a coach that you are able to go into an organization, understand the organizational culture, maybe you're even helping to change that, but that you understand the culture of the people who are working in that organization. And as you know, the thing that's most different about Africa, two things. One, African countries are collective societies. They're not individualistic societies the way the rest of the Western developed world is. But business tends to be individualistic rather than collective. And I think the other thing that is very different, and these are the opportunities and challenges of working in Africa, is that not only are we collective societies versus individualistic societies, very patriarchal, very hierarchical. Men don't like to report to women. There are some things that have to be understood about working in Africa. And in a way, I kind of grew up with that. I grew up in San Francisco, which is a melting pot where you couldn't look a Chinese man in the eye. You had to know how to be with somebody who was Japanese, who was Chinese, who was Asian, who was Hispanic, who was from Eastern Europe, wherever. I sort of grew up with that naturally. And it's certainly very important for coaching in Africa. Sorry, I'm going on.
No, but I think as you were talking, I was thinking the collective individual thing in terms of systemic coaching, often there's pressure, isn't there, to enable people to really look at the whole system, the individual and the team and the organization and society. And you're coming in from a place where people's focus is on the collective and the individual, and there must be some interesting clashes there. In the
You
terms of being a coach.
bring up a really interesting point, which I think was the bugbear for coaching to begin with, which is that coaches coached individuals in an organization and they didn't take into account the system, the network of relationships, the network of functions, the network customers, suppliers, et cetera, that incredible systemic network. Coaches were working individually with clients and taking on board what the client said, but not actually helping the client to deal with the system in which they were working. That's now changing.
My question in other countries, so in Europe and in North America and other places, is I wonder how much COVID and coronavirus will change that, because we're being asked in many parts of the world, we're being asked to make big decisions in service of society in a way that we've never been asked to do that before. And that's causing, of course, some tension. But it will be interesting to see what the long-term consequences are of that in terms of our capacity to see things systemically.
I think the COVID question is an extraordinary one. And many organizations aren't even going to go back to not even going to go into a blended way of working with, part on Zoom or Microsoft Teams, as well as being in the office. Some organizations have already gone back. Many organizations are not going back into the workplace till maybe June next year. I mean, they're waiting for a vaccine. And the impact that has had on coaching has been very profound. I think it's opened the doors for coaching in a way because clients have realized they can work talking to their coach on screen. I think the coaching that has suffered at the hands of working electronically is team coaching.
Yes.
Because, I mean, the team coaching work that we do is very deep with people in terms of transformation and change and developing emotional maturity. And it's very difficult to do the extent of that work online. And so I think team coaching is suffering, which means relationships are suffering. And one of the things that is a result of COVID is a lot of the conflict, which was under the surface in organizations, is above the surface now.
Yeah.
And is not necessarily being dealt with as well as it could be. And that's also where the coach can help.
Yes. Yeah. So lots of shifts now and lots of shifts over time have been happening. So what's different about coaching in Africa compared to the rest of the world, do you think, Sunny, apart from that thing about the collective versus the individual?
What's different is that, yes, it's collective society more than an individualistic society. People are multilingual in Africa. Some people speak 12 languages. My driver in Johannesburg speaks 13 languages. And that is just normal, not to speak 13. But it's normal to be multicultural. And it's respectful to be multilingual. And it's respectful to be multilingual. So the other thing that's different is we have an artisan craftsman culture in Africa, which is huge. So it's a hugely entrepreneurial culture in the underbelly, if you like. And that has an impact on coaching because coaching is getting to people who work in organizations, but it's not getting to maybe some of the people who need it, who are the entrepreneurs and the machine, the economic machine of the country. So I think that's very different. I'm not saying there aren't poor people. I mean, good heavens, you just drive through San Francisco and Seattle in the States and the amount of people who live on the street is quite shocking. But it's different here in that people, when they're just because they're poor, they do get on with it and they are creative. And so the thing about that's different is people are very creative. So in terms of, and the other thing is it's not homogeneous and there's extraordinary diversity. There's extraordinary diversity. And I think that's, people ask me, you know, what do you mean by diversity? And really what I mean is that diversity is about difference, inequality, in power and in worldview. And organizations are like many societies. There isn't necessarily equality. There are certainly power fiefdoms, and there are many different worldviews, but the organization tends to have a view of why it exists. But there are many different worldviews that exist with the people within the organization. I think Africa's different in that way. And the other thing that's different is that I think we have a huge opportunity in South Africa and other sub-Saharan African countries, and I'm sure it's the same in other in Northern Africa, more Arab Africa, in that we have the opportunity to have coaching and mentoring.
Yes.
And I think that's a real plus because it allows for developing people from a very early age, you know, right on up. And, you know, people mostly think of coaching as being something for senior executives because it's expensive, and, you know, most people. But mentoring isn't as expensive, and it's very available and very possible. So I think that's certainly a way for us to, you know, we have the highest population of young people in the world is in Africa. And that's what's different. So those young people are going to need coaching and mentoring as they go through to there.
Yes. And as you said earlier, that's been something that's been embedded in many cultures for many, many generations already.
Right. Yeah.
Developing people. It's interesting because we work with not-for-profits a lot. There's been quite a lot of conversation about asset-based community development, which effectively is the same as coaching in terms of really enabling people to grow and to develop and to use their own resources. So it feels as though there's lots of connections going on, like there is in any new profession. And that would be true in Europe, it would be true in the States, and it's also clearly very true in Africa.
I would completely agree with that. Everything is about connection in Africa. Yeah. Everything is about who you know, yeah. Who's in your network.
Yeah.
That is it all about. Yeah.
Yeah. And that raises challenges and opportunities, doesn't it, in terms of using a coaching style.
Yeah.
So what's new?
What's new? So I think the needs of coaches are different in Africa than they are in the rest of the world. The coaches still need to be developed and need to continue to develop, not just do one certificate or one master's, but to continue to develop themselves. But I think because it's what I said earlier, because coaches have to adapt culturally, I think it is quite different. Where if you're in the United States, you're expected to adapt to being in California or Kentucky, but it's actually not much different, except for maybe the accent is different from California or New York. Sure, it's different, and each state is almost like a little country in itself. But I think the needs of coaches are very different than they are in the States and Australia and say UK and Europe. And I think that's due to the cultural competence that is really needed more and more by coaches. And I will say in South Africa, the coaches aren't necessarily that aware of that.
Yeah,
so they're beginning to be more aware. There's no doubt. The other thing that's different is Africa is not a country.
Yes.
Americans tend to think Africa is a country. Africa is not a country. It's many, many, many different countries, different cultures, different languages. And so the needs are going to be different in each of those. Where in the United States, you could be trained in coaching in New York and work in California. But if you're trained in South Africa, could you work in Kenya? Well, you would need to understand the culture.
Yeah.
And you would need to probably speak one of their African languages, possibly. So I think that's new. I'm not sure what else is new, except that coaching is still new.
Yeah.
Coaching is still new.
Coaching is new and old.
It's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
Actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Sunny. What an interesting conversation. My final question is really about transformation, because I know transformation is something you're very interested in. So it's also something I'm very interested in. So tell me about transformation and coaching and your experience.
So I think transformation means different things to different people. In South Africa, transformation has an equal opportunities element to it, and so it brings in diversity in terms of race and gender, etc. And there's legislation about transformation in South Africa, which is unusual for other countries, and that's just to make sure that people who were not fairly employed in the past were employed. When I think about transformation, I think about the transformation of our consciousness and how we can become more aware of other people and understanding and more compassionate and more empathic with other people that we work with. And so one of the things that is needed for transformation in the workplace is developing what we call relationship intelligence, is beginning to understand each other at a much, much deeper level. And one of the reasons for that transformation is also about, we operate in the world with many limiting assumptions about ourselves. We all have limiting assumptions about our identities. We all have many identities. I'm a woman. I'm Caucasian. I'm a wife. I'm an educator. I'm an academic. I'm a researcher, a writer. I'm etc. I play many, many different roles, and people make assumptions about every role that you carry in your life. There are assumptions about women. There are assumptions about mothers. There are assumptions about men. There are assumptions about leaders. And one of the areas where I think South Africa and maybe other African countries needs transformation is in terms of their view of leadership. And leaders are seen to be the head, il capo, as they would say in Italian. My son-in-law is Italian, so I'm learning Italian. Is that the leader is the head and has the say, but in fact, we need everybody to develop leadership. And so I think transformation that is needed, particularly here in Africa, is not that there is one leader that makes all the decisions, but that everyone in an organization is part and parcel of that, not giving away their power. And transformation comes from developing liberating assumptions about yourself, your identity, how you live in the world, who you are, how you be who you are, what you are capable of. I think it starts with the self, and then it moves out to teams, out into society, out into families and society, etc.
I'm very interested about your connection between transformation and power, because as you were listing off those identities, a few of your identities, I was observing that in some of those people give you power, and in some of them people take away power. And I think for me in coaching, there's something interesting about how power equal do we need to be, or how power equal enough do we need to be in order for coaching to be effective and to be transformational and to engender deep change.
So between coach and client is pure equality. The coach and the client, they're both professionals. They are equal. You have different work experience. You have different expertise. But you are equal as human beings, and you're equal as professionals coming together to work together.
I agree. I agree. And if somebody gives the coach the power, they still have it, even if they haven't taken it.
Yeah. So, and very often the client will not know that they are supposed to be the ones doing the work.
Yeah.
And it's down to the coach to be able to help them to do that. But I think there's something else about power. Even if you don't have the power, I'm not, you know, head of, you know, my country, you know, for example, I'm never going to have a position like that. But I do not feel unequal in terms of, I'm not going to give away the power of my voice. So it's, where do you need to believe that you have your own individual power, and that you can think, you can make decisions, you can have a voice, even if you're not the one with the positional power?
Yeah.
I think that's very important. And that's about transformation.
Completely. Transformation. Thank you, Sunny. So the Pan-African Conversation on Transforming Conversations Through Executive Coaching is taking place on the 3rd, 24th of March and the 14th of April, 2021. And if you want to find out more about it, if you go to www.aeccouncil.com. Thank you, Sunny. What a delight to spend some time listening to your experience in South Africa and across the continent.
Claire, it's been a pleasure to work with you.
Thank you for coming. Have a good day, everyone. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Coaching Inn. Find out more about us at www.3dcoaching.com/b-developed.